Welcome back.
We're back.
We're back. We're having real in the sing-songy voice that we just had, real end of year vibe to the start of the last episode.
100%. 100%.
100%. 100%. Well, today, just us three wrapping up the season together and just spending some time like we did with the mid-season reflection. Just thinking about what we've learned, what we're going to take away, what we're sitting with. I think about how often in leadership education we talk about the meaning making, and then sometimes we forget to do it ourselves. So I think these episodes are really fun that we get to do some of that together. So it'll just be the three of us, and we'll dive in. And we got a couple questions to move us along, and that'll be an episode. You ready?
And a season. And a
And a
season.
season. Cool. Let's dive into the questions. Okay. First question to get our spirits right, because we are recording this in transparency during the thick of finals weeks for folks that work in academic affairs. If you get it, you get it. But what's giving y'all good energy right now? What is keeping you energized and excited and looking ahead?
I feel like I have two answers for this, more of a personal one and more of a professional one. The personal one is I'm really glad we're finally to the point in the year where I don't have to wear snow boots in Vermont.
Yes. Yes, a proper New
So,
Englander.
I mean, this is a serious thing. Like this is May 1 that we're recording this, and just last week in the end of April, I was driving to campus and I see little white flicks coming down out of the sky, and I was like, is that are those? It can't be. And it sure was snow, my
It
friends.
sure
So
was. It sure was.
I thankfully we are into a pattern now where I were that was probably the last time. So
Well, let's keep the probably emphasis, like
let's
probably the last time.
fingers
I wish
crossed.
that listeners could see Derek's Miami face and his reaction to Melissa saying it snowed at the end of April.
Yes, I saw snow for the first time in Indianapolis, and I said, that's cute. Y'all can keep it.
Yeah.
Oh, so funny. There are certain times of year where I love it. Late April is not one of them.
Let me see, Melissa, your Instagram stories of Vermont in the summer, though. I was really envious. Not so envious of snow last week. Not that I would leave.
No, not at all. My professional thing that's giving me energy, maybe it's a mantra. I've been telling folks when they ask how I'm doing, I say I'm doing fine. And I am trying to close all the things that op that are open and not open new ones.
I
That is
like
how I
that.
feel right now.
She's closing tabs.
That's right. Those are like literal, actual like tabs in my browser, as well as like projects, emails that already exist that I probably should have answered days ago, week
Yes,
ago. Like
yes.
those kinds of things.
Retweet. Asterisks.
Just
Clap.
trying to close out the open things and not open any new ones. That's the
Yes.
energy right now.
That's a proper faculty answer, Melissa. That is a good, healthy faculty answer.
Thank you.
Close it out and not open it again.
That's right. I
Derek, what
think,
about you?
yeah, I think similar to Mel, I have personal and professional, right? I think personally, I was talking to someone and I said this semester coming into the summer and then what to get energy right now. One of the things that I'm doing is I'm finally, I think, learning how to prioritize myself and my needs and like my like space. How can I take up space and give up space in different places? So I'm wrestling with that, but that gives me energy because I feel like I am not necessarily as stressed out or as we're always going to be busy, right? Busy is a very contextual term, but how we're always like I'm not necessarily overwhelmed this much. So that's something that's giving me energy is seeing the growth because I said I wanted to make sure that I can grow as a human being throughout this whole journey of life, right? And not stay stagnant. So I can see that. And just knowing that I'm working on myself, which is something I haven't done in the past, is giving me that energy to move forward. So that's personally. And then professionally, I'm just excited because the dissertation is going to happen sooner than later. And as much as I know that process is going to take a while, gives me energy because I know I'm finally doing something. My dissertation topic very much relates to some of my salient identities, both as a leadership educator and as a Caribbean American. So I'm excited to be able to write about something that I know I wish I had when I was a kid, right? Or like I wish I had growing up. So more of a personal professional, I guess, is that second one. So that gives me energy knowing that we'll be able to contribute to a knowledge base that I wish I had when I was growing up or in my understandings of what leadership looks like as a whole. So what about you, Britt?
Derek is also now taking requests for therapy sessions on how to have a healthy outlook on completing your
Yes.
dissertation,
Correct.
because
Correct.
that is
Boundaries.
legit such a great way to think about it. So for anyone that is struggling with how to reframe your thoughts
You can
about writing,
find his email on FSU's website.
please.
That's right.
Or you can shoot us a DM at NASPA underscore SOPKC. I will answer it. So
That's what you good plugs. And the first question too, what shameless plugs we're giving.
should do.
Good energy. I like the personal and professional. And I think it'll be good for spoiler alert, our last question will be good to mirror this too. Personally, people can laugh all they want. Taylor Swift's new album is bringing me a lot of joy and good energy. And I saw a tweet that said, this Taylor Swift album is for people who wrote a dissertation. And anyone who's listening to this that has written a dissertation, they understand because she uses a lot of words. It's very lyrical, it's very poetic, but very fun to follow. And it's 31 new songs. So you're not lacking on new content, which is just wonderful. So I am enjoying some new music. And I think we're starting to get lots of new music for the summer, which puts you in a real summer energy. But the University of Maryland does have 3 weeks left. So I'm not fully allowed to be in summer energy yet. So once we get to just summer energy, I'm really excited, fully enjoy. I'm also really challenging myself to read for fun again. For folks who have also done a PhD, I'm now almost exactly a year out, and finally getting myself to a place where like I feel like I can shift reading back to like a fun, enjoyable thing too, that's not just work or writing related. So really that is a summer goal I'm starting to really get excited about. Making your routine and making it fun again, and not just because right now it feels like a chore sometimes to be like, oh, I should read 10 pages before bed, or I should touch my book today. But getting back into a healthy space with reading for fun, for all the fun
Well,
things.
I admire that. I am not a for fun reader. I
I
have not
agree.
been as an adult.
I was growing, I used to, I was the library kid that like did the like read 20 books over the summer and got your library thing, and then you went and got the like a little award, and I've always loved it. And then when I was in grad school, it just shifted to being such a chore, in good and bad ways, right? Like in many ways of, and it became something that was always really strenuous of like you're stretching your brain and you're having to like comprehend and make meaning of what you're reading, where I'm reading for fun, you just be like, oh, I get to follow a story and enjoy it for what it is, you know, on face value. So about that, professionally, I feel like I'm somewhere between Mel and Derek, where I do feel like I'm in the energy of closing some tabs, but I'm all of my existing projects right now, and three of them are pretty large, are like at the like for folks who know like the proofs stage. Like we're not done, but we're
Oh.
almost done. But I haven't used my editor hat, but it's really exciting because they finally are like quote unquote real. You know, like so we're at the final draft stage of our new directions for student leadership that will be out in the fall on the Leadership Learning Framework. So we have all 16 articles essentially like done and cleaned. Mel, you're smiling because you know the feeling when it's like finally almost to the finished product, you can ship it off to the team for one last time. So that's almost done. We just got the cover art for a book that's coming out this summer that we're excited about, an undergrad book. So a lot of them are like, again, like very close, but like not close enough that I'm closing the tab, but like it can go dormant, you know, for like a minute. Like we're and then we get to wait for like the fun reveal and those things too. So that's exciting. And I feel like similarly, I'm trying to not take on a ton of new, because I also think when we say yes to a lot of things and the things that actually give us energy and make us excited, we don't have capacity for when they come around, you know. So like leaving the space for when the things we get excited about come around, rather than saying yes because we're supposed to keep saying yes to things when we have technically do have capacity.
I get that. I so get that.
Yeah.
Well,
Sorry,
in
starting to
all,
feel like a therapy session. Just fabulous.
I know. We could talk about this the whole time, couldn't we? I was just thinking too about what was that?
I was like, it could be, and it probably should be. We have a whole season just in this.
I know. I am thinking about a little bit about like what have we learned from our friends this semester, maybe as we move into like closing out the school year. So, I mean, certainly we've all had lots of good conversations this spring in lots of different places, but specific to this podcast, Gosh, we've talked to some grad students. We've talked to practitioners from across different functional areas. We've talked to some fraternity and sorority life folks. We've talked to our LEI Leadership Educator Institute planning team. And we've talked to some folks doing research and assessment in leadership education. So maybe my question to the two of you is, what is sticking out to you about the wonderful conversations we've had this spring? Maybe it's something specific from an episode, or maybe it's like just a general kind of theme or thought that's kind of bubbled up from across the episodes.
I got two gut reactions. First one is kind of small, but it was a shift in mindset for me. So folks that are listening to this likely work in student affairs and leadership, the intersection of those two, being it we're an ASPA sponsored podcast. But I think that so often in student affairs, we start with like the how did you get here? And we're like, oh, I was an orientation leader, I was an RA, and someone said I could do this for a living. And we tell that story, right? Of like where I started in undergrad. And sometimes it feels a bit like, in full transparency, like a rinse and repeat. We're like, oh, everyone was a quote unquote involved student, and then they went to grad school and then they did it and right and whatever. But I think there was something particular for me in the FSL episode that the three of them, when they talk about their journeys, they talked about with such intentionality of like, not only, yes, I got involved as an undergrad and then end up where I am, but the way that all three of them were able to reflect back on how their socialization as undergrads and the way that they were taught leadership and talked about leadership actually still influences the work that they do, whether that's unlearning or relearning or upholding or doing things differently and challenging things, and still feeling connected to like the beginning of their origin story, right? We heard a lot of origin stories this season, but I feel like for them, and as they answer our questions and they had conversation amongst themselves, I felt like it kept being grounded back in like a, how did I begin here? Like, how did I get to this? And maybe that's the nature of fraternity and sorority life and that you have to have that experience right as an undergrad for the most part for folks that work in that discipline. But I do remember having a couple of moments where I'm like, oh, they're really grounding it in like a holistic developmental for them and their students of being able to center like the origin of them as an undergrad to still working with undergraduate students too. The second is the assessment one, which is the newest one, which is probably why it's still really, really stuck on my brain. But I literally on my desk still have the note right here of some of the takeaways I had because it was an episode where I felt like my brain was stretching in a way that it hasn't in a bit. And I think about I keep saying the dynamic collective and context as those three Lindsay Hastings terms of like how we should be thinking about it, and not even just an assessment, right? Like in our practice, thinking about how we're dynamic, collective, and contextually driven. And I think so much of that, I love that that ended up being our last episode because so much of that wraps up our season so nicely of how do we stay dynamic, how do we do this work collectively, and how do we center context in all that we do. So those
I
are two
love
that are
that.
sticking in the movie.
Derek, my friend, what about you?
Yeah, no, I think for me, again, the dissertation is the one thing that's on my mind right now. So I apologize for all
Yeah.
the
Context is the lens through
ontological
which you see the
collective
world right
dynamic.
now.
Exactly. But for me, I really think about like going back to your point, Britt, of like the stories that we need to have in order to like get to where we are now, especially as leadership educators, leadership lifelong leadership learners, right? I think we can even call ourselves that. But specifically, I've been diving into a lot of the work of leadership educator identity development and how we can develop that identity as an educator while still acknowledging that that development in the terms of leadership and our leadership development is still also continuously happening. And I think a lot, I saw that specifically in our transition between the grad student panel and the practitioners panel of how can we continuously still do the work, but we don't necessarily have to be in a leadership studies office, a leadership studies academic field, a leadership studies program to engage with leadership's like development, education in our specific field. Because I know for me, that's something I struggle with. Like post grad, I'm like, do I want to go the faculty route? Do I want to do teaching faculty? Do I want to go practitioner route? If I choose practitioner route, what would that look like? Because there's so many different subsets of that. But knowing that at the end of the day, I can still do what I want to do, just in like going back to our season, right? In that different context. And I think that's an important piece that kind of stuck with me, especially as someone who will be starting the job search soon and starting the turning in final documents and everything soon. How can we make these experiences transferable, but also acknowledging that these experiences don't just come to us one day. Like we all say, yeah, one day in a graduate program, it clicked. And that's when we kind of realize it. I think about what were the moments that clicked continuously for this to click? So was it that conversation you had with your middle school teacher, or like how I had shared before as a show choir student, my first positional leadership role as a show choir student. I never thought over 15 years later that I would be sharing that as part of my leadership origin story when we asked that question, right? So I think a lot about the milestones that we hit that we don't realize we hit them until we take that critical reflection kind of route of like acknowledging where were we, how did we get here, and where can we keep on going to enhance not only ourselves as professionals, but also ourselves as individuals. Because I think that's an important piece that a lot of times, I forget who in one of our other episodes has said it, but our identities, like we always think about leadership education, right? I think a lot of times that's not necessarily something that we just do it for work, right? I think that's something that we see it in the wild. To quote Jillian Volpe White's assessment in the wild, right? We see leadership in the wild as well. We see leadership in everything that we do. And it's important to understand that while we don't necessarily have to do like an empirical research project on every little thing we see in research, that a lot of times these things still impact us, and how can we see that story leading up to that, I think is an important piece to that.
No, I appreciate that so much. I think, well, one, for listeners who want to read more about what Derek is talking about, be sure you look up the Leadership Identity Development Model and all the related literature, because that's essentially what we're talking about, right? This notion of leadership happens in moments, and you learn leadership lessons from lots of different things. And there's some formal things that we do as educators to prompt that learning and development in people. That's our role as leadership educators. But then there's also stuff that happens in life that teaches you things about leadership. And while we may not have control over what those things are, we certainly can take some control and ownership about reflecting on it, processing it, learning from it, applying it, all those kinds of things. And so I think that for me, honestly, you like handed me the perfect segue, Derek, into my response to this question, because I think that's what I am, what's bubbling up for me across our the second half of our season. You know, we talked to folks in lots of different one stages of their leadership education professional careers, and two, across lots of different functional areas and contexts and types of work within this leadership education umbrella. And I think what keeps coming up for me is how differently each of them like work to prompt, right? The leadership learning moments with students, for students, together with their peers and for their peers. Like everything they do is so different and unique, and yet it's all needed. And it's all like every one of them is playing a really important role in this like world of leadership education that we all care so deeply about. And so I think whether it's folks that are we talk to folks who are focused on like, you know, kind of like individual student or leader development kind of work. We've talked to folks who are studying like phenomenon within like leadership learning and development or leadership education, even at like the institutional systems level. We've talked to folks that are in certainly in different higher ed functions, but also even higher ed adjacent functions. We've talked to folks who don't even primarily identify as leadership educators, but who do that work in lots of contexts. And so I just think for the variety there, it's just really it's heartening to know that we've got all of that kind of like on our team and in our corner of the world and in higher ed, that the leadership education is going to be all right, basically, is how
Yeah,
I feel about
yeah.
it, you know?
You both have prompted me to think about. I think what's really interesting, because I my role is housed within a student affairs unit, right? I'm within a student union, but I still think about and I think how much, especially our first three episodes of this half, so the grad student practitioner and fraternity sorority life panel, I think how often like we say in our field, right? Everyone's a leadership educator, everyone should be doing leadership education work, but how many times like our un like our biased lived experience assumption is that means they like do a leadership workshop, right? Like everyone like that they put on a program, they might have like a 3 week workshop series, right? Or they like get them a workbook to work through, right? But we don't often think about, and I think about how much those three episodes for me really contextualize everything we talk about. That yeah, it's the one-on-one student interactions, it's the coaching conversations, it's the resilience training they talk about when students like quote unquote fail, right? In a role and how they develop them in that way too. And I think about how much it, yeah, the leadership educator identity development, but also how much leadership identity development they're doing for their students in so many multifaceted, dynamic, innovative ways. That just aren't captured other places, right? And I think about, especially when we're reading our scholarship, we do a lot on talking about like big pedagogies or interventions or things too. But we don't always capture that magic. Like again, the folks I could talk about a one-on-one conversation with a student that resulted in a major capacity or efficacy boost that we don't always capture in the data or in our writing too. And I think, yeah, about the way that helped challenge my own assumptions that are like underlying still from previous experience, right? That like, oh, when we t say that, what does it actually look like to say that everyone in student affairs should be a leadership educator? What does that actually contextualize to be?
Yeah, we've been trying to wrestle with that for a long time. I feel like we're getting
Yeah.
better at understanding it and addressing it and helping to train and develop one another and new folks to the community, but it continues to be something that we need to attend to. Absolutely.
Well, it's such a cycle, and Mel, we've talked about this before too, but like for a while it was, you said everyone's a leadership educator, but then people were doing things and calling it leadership education that it wasn't quite, right? Like it was like, oh, they're saying something's leadership and maybe it's something else, right? Maybe it's management training or maybe it's, you know, human development, which is also great, but there wasn't necessarily always the connection there. And I think for these folks, they showed how it can be the both and of all of that, right? It's student development, it's student learning, it's you know, management training, and they still find spaces and places to intentionally map leadership onto the work that they do. And that intentionality for me was really, really encouraging and exciting to hear what's happening across the country and across functional areas.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. All righty. Also, I know we kind of dipped a little bit into our next question, but I think we have a lot of conversations, right? And a lot of things stick with us. But for me personally, at least, sometimes when I have conversations, a lot of more questions come up that weren't necessarily asked, but I think still need to be answered, right? So what are some of those questions that I guess that y'all still have left, right? From an episode, or again, we can go more broad like we have with our past answers, but what are those questions, right? What are some questions that you think that you may have about any episode, about someone's experience, about anything related to anything that we've heard about this season? Because for me, I know that's something that I tend to like when I'm in the back, for those that don't know, I usually like mute myself when we do the podcast recording. So when I'm in the back, sometimes I write questions like, I wonder what this looks like, or I wonder how would it look like in a context with this population or within this, you know, institution type or something like that. So what are those maybe critical questions that you still have or you're wrestling with from an episode so far?
One of the things I've been thinking about actually kind of stems from Brittany's answer to the last question at the end there, but I think as student learning and development professionals broadly, right, that's how the three of us got into leadership education. That's how a lot of our listeners to this podcast probably identify. We're often so focused on like the individual, like you're focused on the individual as the unit of measurement, essentially, or the unit of examination, if we're going to get really like technical about it. And so one of the things that we haven't talked about it a lot on this particular podcast, but one of the things that is coming up for me in reflection across our episodes is, in what ways are we challenging ourselves and continuing ourselves to pay attention to kind of like the systems level or organizational level or institutional level messages, ethos around what leadership is, who it's for, who is celebrated in leadership and who isn't. Some of that kind of the criticality around messaging about dominant narratives for me, I think that's a contextual lens that we have to keep in mind. And I will own it. I think it's hard for me sometimes as someone who was kind of trained, again, as like a student-focused learning and development person to focus on what is happening with this individual student. Because you're right, Britt. I think a lot of us focus on the coaching and the mentoring and how can we be like the person on campus that the students come to talk about all of the things. And not that that is not important, it absolutely is. And so many of us in this community are very skilled at doing that. But when we do that at the detriment of our attention to some of those bigger themes and our awareness around ways we might be perpetuating some of those narratives and some of those, like, think about our policies and the way we go about designing programs and how we're running application processes, and like all of those things are important for us to keep in mind too. And I think for me, I don't think it's a criticism of any of the work that, of any of the people that we've necessarily talked to, but I do think it's a focus that I'll speak for myself again. I'm not as wired to look at first. And I'm trying to train myself and talking with a lot of others. I think others struggle with this too, trying to train myself to remember to look at those bigger systems and structures. just as much as I'm looking at the individual unit or individual student, if you will. I don't know. I think that's what I'm, that's a big kind of challenge. I think I'm reflecting on how important that is and how we all need to continue to be better at doing that.
Mine connects to Melissa's, I think, in the like a plus, right? Like a yes, that, all of that. And I've been thinking a lot about our season was based on context. All we did in theory was talk about context for 12 plus hours across all the episodes, right? Probably closer to 15 or 16. Derek will probably know. But I've been thinking about, someone was asking this, like, where is leadership education research scholarship headed? Someone asked it the other day. They said, where do you think we're, where is it going? Where is the field going? And I reflected back to, 10 years ago or so, when everyone was talking about DEIJ and social identities and leadership, right? And they're like, there's not scholarship. And then we've got some brilliant scholars, many of whom were on this season, talking about, they finally started putting some things in writing and research to say, like, hey, here's ways you can. It's not the way, but here's ways that our lived experience as a collective can inform leadership education development, right? Like, how, here's how you can see it for this group of students or this institution type or whatever it may be. And I think about, especially reflecting on our assessment research panel last, but informing the whole season, we don't necessarily right now have that for context. And I think part of it was we did this social identity work, which was incredible, right? And we got the scholarship. But I think we all had a moment pivotally where we're like, we're not going to be able to capture this for every identity, lived experience, anything. So then we brought in context, right? We're like, the context is so important to informing the experience someone has, right? Even if we understand all Melissa's lived experiences from research scholarship development, Melissa in Vermont is going to look different than Melissa where she was previously in a different role, a different context, different people, whatever it is. And that's great. But then part of me was like, well, then we, it feels like we paused a little bit in trying to understand how to actually conceptualize context and then use it to inform our practice, right? Because it's almost like, it's almost the idea when we said like leadership is socially constructed. So it's always just like we make it up with those around us and then people stop like trying to wrestle with that. Like, yes. And like, how do we understand social construction of leadership, right? Like, we can't just say it's like the biggest thing and then not understand the nitty gritty of like, yes, and let's make sense of it. So I think for me from this season, I'm like, there's so much brilliance that was covered. And again, I think we talked about it in the last question too, right? Of like the ways that they're doing this in the one-on-one conversations and again, driven by their context or through programs or through different interventions within the context that they exist within. But I don't know that we have the foundation of our field yet to really understand the influence of context and then try to use that to make meaning to inform our practice, other than that we know it's really important and we know we have to honor it. And I don't think we'll ever get to a place where we can say, like, if you're in this institution type with this type of program and this type of staffing structure and this type of policy, certainly not. But I think there's more to be wrestled with of trying to make sense at the highest level that we can of, like, especially for the folks that are like, I just got in leadership out of my portfolio and I don't know what to do with it, that at least they have a starting point to understand, like, what does context influence in leadership education development and trainings. And there are certainly some folks, and we culturally relevant leadership learning model we talk about all the time, that try to start wrestling with some of that too. But I think where I'm sitting with is like, what is that going to look like in our next wave of leadership education development training and literature? Like, what does that look like for us to try to make sense? Literature practice, conference presentations, collective conversations, right? Like Lindsay Hastings joke of like over wine after a conference, right? Like, what does that look like for us to collectively move forward, knowing how important it is, but not just saying it's important, so you should do it, but actually coming together collectively to say, like, okay, and how, right? Like, and what? Like, the answering the bigger questions of if it is so important, how do we make it such a cornerstone foundation pivot point of practice to make sure that we're actually honoring context and not just saying we're doing it?
Totally fair. Totally
Yeah.
fair.
Agreed. I think for me, one of the questions that I'm wrestling with, I'll take a little bit of a different path than maybe what you and Mel took. It was I think a lot about in my scholarship around Latinx leadership. We talk a lot about generativity and how we inspire the next generation of whatever, right? Of people, of groups, of people
Human.
in humans, right? And we just offline before this had a conversation about like you learn a lot about yourself after you have a baby, right? So like how do you like do these type of things as well? So one of the things that I think I'm trying to understand, and I think it's specifically related to like fraternity sorority life episode that we had, is how do we do, like, I don't want to use the word positive generativity, but how are we being critically generative of the field for the next round of leadership educators that are coming after us? Because I think a lot of times we harp on the fact of like, this was the model that we use, and these are, and I think this is not even just in leadership education, I think it's throughout a lot of different fields. We stick to like traditional models, and then we see what builds off of that, and then we see what builds off of that. But I tell people all the time, every 4 years you have a new class of college students coming in. So every 4 years that may look a little bit different. And I think a lot about models and theories on generativity and how we can apply those to leadership in a way that not only looks for the context that we have in this episode, but I also think about in a way that inspires social change. Because I think a lot of time that looks very different. Yes, we have our social change model of leadership, and we have Lid, and I know they both have connections to generativity in both of those. But I think a lot about the way that we can do that, not only for our students, but also for our faculty, our staff members, our program managers, because at the end of the day, these positions and membership and groups and communities create an environment that not only allows us to be generative in that process for whoever comes after us, but also, how can we then critically examine what should we be generative of, and what are some of the things that we should leave behind, right, as the times progress? I think a lot about the whole conversation around like when is something tradition, right, and when is something else, right, for lack of a better term. So, and how does that look very different when you're trying to be generative and continue a process, but also being critical of like, this looks different, this context is different, we need to ensure that, right? So I think that's a question that I'm wrestling with. And I specifically think about that in the context of our LEI friends as well. Like, how do we shift from planning an online conference to an in-person conference, now the second iteration of another in-person conference? So how do we learn from the previous conferences, what worked online, and how do we keep on moving forward, right? So I think those pieces as well is something that I'm kind of like, have a question about, right? Like, how can, and I think that's a contextual question. Like, how can, in this context, we continuously be critically generative of what we should be passing on, and when we should be saying, yeah, we did this, but it didn't work out, so let's maybe not do this, right? Or something like that. So I think that's where my question would lie. And I think that goes across all of our episodes, really. And I think our whole season too, of like, every context looks different, and we need to make sure that we acknowledge what should we be taking and what sh we should be leaving. Because as we know, that we should not be taking everything, we should not be leaving everything that we learned. So,
I'm having this moment too as y'all talk about how everything we're talking about is cyclical, and most of what we're talking about isn't particularly novel, right? Like
Yeah,
we are,
totally.
these are questions and notions and ideas that plenty of folks in our community and before us have been talking about, and context, our current context may make them look a little different or have us approach them differently, or hopefully loop in others, more people, right? But I think that's important to acknowledge too, right? Like we're
Right.
not
Yeah.
leadership educator geniuses here. Like these are not things
Totally.
that are new, but just I think it just speaks to the power of getting to learn together, the three of us, and with all of our, episode guests, being able to be in a space like this and talk through some things and consider some stuff and just process together in this way, I think is so important. I'm just really grateful for the chance to do it and for a community, a professional community that welcomes that. To your point, Derek, is by nature very generative, likes to bring people along, and is without not certainly not without its flaws, but it's here for the evolution, and just really appreciate I really appreciate that, I think, about the all
Yeah.
of this whole experience.
I agree. I was someone was just talking to me, someone outside of like leadership education, or at least in their 9 to 5 traditional hat, was outside leadership education. They're like, "What makes you really excited about your work?" And I said one thing, and this is something that Kathy and Dan wrote in their what we lovingly call the Butterfly Book, The Role of Leadership Educators Transforming Learning. But they wrote in it like leadership education as a general field, and even leadership studies is a somewhat new discipline, right? So it feels like, again, even though these things are somewhat can seem foundational or like common sense or knowledge, we are still in a field that that those things are new and emergent and exciting. And even thinking about a project I did with Kathy a couple years ago, we just looked at institutional mission statements to see if leadership was in there because we didn't even know, right? As I feel, we hadn't done the work to say, like, is higher education using leadership like language? What does that look like? It feels really exciting. Yeah, when we have these conversations, it's not like we're leaving everyone being like, my whole worldview of this work has shifted. But it's like, oh, that is like, that's innovative, right? They're taking a new approach to our work that feels exciting and again is grounded in their context and their space and their lived experiences. That feels, yeah, really cool and exciting to see what's coming.
I know. I
Pretty
know.
lucky, aren't we? I
We
know.
are.
I'm feeling some gratitude, which is great. In that same notion, our last question before we do some wrap up and a couple shameless plugs that I hope people appreciate as gentle reminders of what's to come in our field. It's kind of ending how we started. So as we look for the summer and maybe even to the fall, depending on what is your answer to this question, but particularly summer. What's something that you're looking forward to, both personally and professionally? What's coming up for you as we wrap up this season that you're getting excited about? I wish you all saw the soft smiles that are happening on this. As we look at each other, thinking ahead and doing some soft smiling.
I kind of just want to say, like, being done with grading. Like, we're just
That's
gonna
where
keep
my
it.
head went, and I was like,
Maybe you got, maybe you too, as you're in your finals week, can do like a short and long-term version of this question.
we're just gonna keep it
Like,
like real, very practical. Like, I'd just like to be done with grading. maybe what I'll offer to what I'm looking forward to for the summer. Some downtime, certainly. I told you all at the beginning of this journey this year that I was hoping to become a kayak person, and I am still holding out hope
Yes, fingers
that
crossed.
I will get on a kayak, or I am going sailing. I'm going to be on a sailboat this summer at for like a little sail day, which I'm excited about, Lake Champlain, y'all. So I'm pumped about that. But I think professionally, like, I'm jazzed about a couple of PD opportunities. So I'll be at the Association for Leadership Educators Conference this summer, which is in Minneapolis, representing NCLP. And so y'all have heard me at some point talk about the anti-racist kind of, like, I guess, themes and approaches and kind of community that we're trying to establish through NCLP. For those who can't see us on Zoom right now, I'm waving my hands in the air because we're just essentially trying to talk to more people about those topics and themes, and we're going to be doing that with our friends at ALE this summer in Minneapolis. So I'm pumped about that. And again, another way to just be more collaborative in our field with our colleagues who do similar work and in different contexts. That's why we're going. So I'm excited about that. And we'll be facilitating at the International Leadership Association's Leadership Education Academy, which is focused on pedagogy and design of leadership education programs and courses. So it's a lot of PD for the summer. Usually I don't do a ton of PD in the summer, but I'm excited about getting to engage with some cool folks and communities in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
What about
I know.
you, Derek?
I know for me, I personally, I'm just ready to. I officially submitted yesterday my last assignment for my coursework phase of my PhD. So,
Hey, cheers.
that was a very big sigh of relief after being 20 years in a classroom. We're lifelong students, sure, but I would like to be a lifelong life learner, not necessarily in the classroom in that capacity for lifelong. But so I'm glad I could close or mildly close that chapter in my life.
Yeah.
But for me, I think personally that has brought me a lot of I can see me having a lot more time now. Granted, we'll be built up of other stuff with professional development and the dissertation, as I mentioned probably 5 times on this episode. So I'm excited for that, to be able to get some time back to not necessarily have to learn but apply, right? And understand and digest and connect. So I think those are some of the things that I'm excited for personally, because I think I pour so much into my work that I know sometimes, and we have the conversation of like, should the work be pouring into your personal life? Should it be doing these things? And I think it does, but in such a beautiful way that I get to be able to see the change that I learned about in these books, or the ways that we can apply this and that to understand certain things. I even talk about, which is a funny story, I went to a my first outside of higher education conference in at Michigan State a month ago, and I even talked about something. And I said, "Oh yeah, that's literally going through all the stages of the sexual identity development model." And I said, "The fact that I knew that off the top of my head is a little scary." So I was like, "So being able to not only understand those personal things, but being able to have time to sit, apply, and create something new, I think is what I'm personally excited for, even though it ties more to my personal academic stuff. More personal, Derek, as a human, I'm excited because I just need to give a shout out. My best friend had a baby, and I'm going to be the godfather of her baby. So I'm excited to be able to meet her eventually as soon as I can get back to, as Brittany shared earlier, and then from the Miami area. So I'm excited to do that. And then professionally, I'm just excited for the opportunities that are to come, right? I think sometimes we don't necessarily know what's coming. And I think that's the beauty of working in a field like student affairs and higher ed. Asterisk on beauty. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, so to each their own. But I think that's one of the reasons why I specifically love this field, right? That every day doesn't necessarily look the same, right? And I think that comes with going to conferences, that comes with publications, that comes with just experiences, that comes with talking with students and other faculty members and staff members. So I think that that's something professionally that I'm looking forward to this summer, is to reground myself in the full, like the niche work that I want to do. Because I think we're in education, you do ground yourself in the work. Just the niche work of what you want to do, I think, is the important piece to that. So that's something that I think is giving me energy for this summer, professionally for that.
I love that.
Yeah. I'll start with personal. I am excited this summer to more mindfully give back to myself. I'm pretty good. I don't sacrifice sleep during the school year. I don't sacrifice like calling loved ones. Like there's things that I do that I ensure, you know, you keep your bearings to you. But as I mentioned earlier, like I'd love to get back to like reading for fun again. Like I want to start, you know, enjoying the nice weather before it's like 6:30 p.m. Like there's some things that I can do just to be more mindfully restful during the day and more intentional on, we always joke like self-care is not just the bubble bath, right? But like if you're reading in the bubble bath and that gives you energy and excitement, being more mindful with the practices you do around that too, just to feel re-energize and properly re-energize rather than like, oh, I got 8 hours of sleep last night, I should feel fine, and you still feel depleted, right? So I think that there's some shifting that I'm really excited about having the capacity to do this summer, and that I think those are also again like good habits where if you practice them enough that even when the school year then comes back it gets stressful and busy, that they're already good practice and it's like riding a bike, right? So I'm excited for having this space in place to be able to do some of that this summer. Professionally, back to my beginning of like the half-closed tabs or the dormant tabs that are kind of rearing their heads. I have a category on my whiteboard that's like accepted and waiting. I'm in the accepted and waiting for a couple of things, but they're all coming out probably either midsummer or late summer. So the our new book, Kathy Guthrie and I wrote a book last. Actually, last summer, I finished my dissertation and then we were on a call and she was like, I got this idea. And it's an undergrad book. It's short and sweet. It's like 100 pages. It's an undergrad book called Foundations of Leadership, Principles, Practice, and Progress with Information Age Publishing that is really just covering some foundations of leadership for folks, especially co-curricular folks who don't have time to read a 400-page introduction to leadership book, right? Of like, what is the boots on the ground? All the chapters are like 10 to 15 max pages, right? Like they're shorter. So like if you have a workshop series and you want your students just read something beforehand to get a little context, it's meant to be that. And it has pause for reflection questions through it. It's got some activities in it. So just things that can be hopefully a helpful resource. But something that was really energizing to write when we did it. So I'm excited it's coming out because I joked with Kathy. I think it was fun to write because writing for undergrads feels like teaching. And so many of us love teaching. And it was a really fun way to be like, if I'm actually sharing this knowledge and not just looking for like the right way to frame it in the third person and make sure it sounds scholarly, but actually just saying like what is here and being honest and blunt with undergrads, it was a fun project to write too. And then you brilliant scholars contributed to a New Directions for Student Leadership that's coming out in the early fall months around leadership learning framework, but it's one of those ones where I've read each of the articles now like six times in the final edits that we're in. But every time I read them, I feel like I'm getting something new from it, which is so exciting. I can say that because I didn't write any of the ones I'm learning the most from. But like the ones I'm editing, like I feel like every time I'm in it, I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Like this is stuff I need to be using. I've already cited some of the articles and things too. So I'm excited that will be out in people's hands and that the folks that said yes to being a part of it are there, and it's about half and half, 50-50 split of folks that consider themselves scholars and folks that consider themselves primarily practitioners. So you get a blend of voices too, which feels really fun. I know you both wrote with folks that are kind of on both sides of the house too. So it gets to be really fun that you get to share in those spaces too. And it's some new and emerging voices that aren't always in our works that are in there too. So just excited that those things are we're out of the woods but not out of the park, you know. So we're like we're emerging to the gates, and it feels fun that they're almost there. And then yeah, in the summer maybe not opening a bunch more tabs with the fingers crossed.
Set yourself up well for the fall, right? That's the goal, is in the summer, is to not like not take on things because you're relaxed in the summer, right? And so you take on don't start to take on things because you feel relaxed and you have the capacity, because you're going to have to do it during the year when you don't have the capacity.
I was talking Kathy Guthrie and I crossing the other day. I said I need to be more mindful when I say yes to projects, at looking at when it's the final deadline it's due and not just the first one. Because sometimes the first one, I'm like, oh yeah, I have capacity next month and a half to get an outline or do whatever it is. Like, I'll be like, yeah, totally have capacity right now. And then I don't look at that they all have the same 2 week deadline, which was April for me this term. So I need to be better about looking at all of the deadlines rather than just like, oh, the first one sounds fun and fine. And
The
we're
other
just
piece of it,
manifesting.
yeah, that I don't want to get on a tangent, but the other piece of advice that I love that someone gave me about right choosing what to when and what to write is, do I need to be the person to write this? Because if I don't need to be the person, if there are other people, and that's the spirit, right? That's back to that generative spirit of our
Totally.
field. But like, if there are other people that we know of who would be the better person to write this, whether it's their topic area or their stage in their career or their what, or they need an opportunity or whatever that is, do I need to be the person to do this? And sometimes the answer is yes, and sometimes the answer is no, and we need to be okay with some owning that sometimes the answer is no.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Y'all, in the spirit of wanting to be together all of the time, can we remind people about
Yes.
LEI?
So important. And again, with the undergirded spirit that we want to be together all of the time.
That's right.
And especially in person, because I do think, especially, I think Derek and I can specifically say this being doc students during the pandemic, there is such joy of physically being together in a community of practice, like such joy. Of being together in a community of practice. So the Leadership Educators Institute, which we had a whole episode on. So if you have not listened to that episode, pause, go back to that episode. But before you pause and go back there, the call for programs is due May 31st. There is a variety of types of programs. So I know oftentimes when I'm talking to practitioners or grad students or folks who are new to the field, they're like, well, I have nothing to present. And that is simply an incorrect statement. There is something that you can share in your work, in your field, in your process. There's these wonderful, like 20 to 30 minute learning labs you can put in. That's just like, it literally says like the description of is like an innovative practice you do, right? Like what's a program you do or a practice or something that you think the collective field could learn from. So if you have time, if you have capacity, the deadline is now not till May 31st. So hopefully most folks are done with their spring terms and maybe not fully in summer swing yet, as far as if you're teaching or doing summer programs, orientation folks looking at you. If you're not quite there yet, there's some time in pocket of there too. I did one the other day. They don't take that long. They're not super strenuous as far as the actual program proposal and really just being intentional of like, what are your learning outcomes? What will people get from this program? And what are you hoping to share with the group? So those are all housed through primarily the NASCA website, but you can find it also through ACPA and NCLP. They'll all get you to the right spot. And then you submit to the NASCA portal. But those are due May 31st and registration is open too. So we'd love to see you register and come to join us in Philadelphia, December 9th through the 11th. Friends, what did I miss?
I think those are the th we those are the things. I mean, we want to see
Those are the
y'all.
things.
We want to see you all at LEI. That's the deal. We certainly hope that you will be there. And if you can't, remember that it happens every other year. And in off years, NCLP runs the National Leadership Symposium with our friends at LeadershAPE. So there is always something for you to do with us in December. We hope
Yes.
that you will join us.
Yeah. So we really hope to see you all there. And if you are there and you listen to any part of our season and just want like a thought partner or something to process, or you have one of these big questions sitting on your brain still from a season two, we would so love to connect. And not even just at LAI, right? I think I could speak for all three of us that if you are just somebody who does this work alone on your campus or is maybe just looking for a way to get more connected in our field of practice and our community of practice, send us an email, shoot us a message, come find us at LEI or ALE or LEA or all the terms of all the different professional development conferences that we might be at. We would just love to connect with the field. I think the reason the three of us did this podcast is to feel more connected to the practice of what we all do and the community that we have. So if there's any way we can do that and be more connected with you all and help you find your way and space and place in this field, we would be more than happy to do that.
Can I maybe close this out by saying, Derek, you're the real MVP. Thank you for being an amazing
Derek is
producer.
literally the MVP of the
I try,
season.
y'all.
This
I try.
season is sponsored by Diet Coke and Derek.
Yes.
And
That should be the
not
name of my dissertation,
informally,
actually. Diet Coke and
correct.
Derek.
That's
Not
right.
informally, Diet Coke, don't sue us. But this season is really, Derek, you, I don't think people realize again, because you usually are mute for episodes, but Derek does all of the logistics, piecing us all together, cutting out every dog bark that we've had this season, every Stanley cup with ice in it, like every noise that you guys could have heard, or background piece or cough during flu season. He cut all those out and made it sound way better than we did in the original recording, and does all of our fearless marketing. So if you found your way to the podcast, it's probably because of Derek. So thank you, friend.
I thank y'all. It's easy to work with great people. So that's something I always appreciate of y'all as well.
We got two Midwest girls here, so just
Yeah,
a
I've been learning the language of pop and not soda lately. So
Yes.
Oh, taking me
Look
back.
at
at that giggle you got there. She's a real Clevelander.
I know it. I know it. All
Oh, well, it feels
right,
weird to like sign off for the last time, but what a fun season we've had.
I know. Many thanks to our friends at NASPA and our friends at NCLP for letting
Yes.
us do this. And to all of you for listening, we appreciate you so much. Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for being there. We'll see y'all soon.